Right around about question 8 is where we'll begin just in a moment. All right, as we ended class on Wednesday night, Paul was on his way to Jerusalem, and the early part of, thank you, Trent, the early part of Acts chapter 20, chapter 21, has Paul going through Caesarea, and as we remember, he went to the house of Philip the Evangelist. Those verses there describe him as he had spent the last, as we understand, the last 20, 25 years in Caesarea. And following that visit, after that initial visit, if you will, then they also commented that, and this took us down through we're starting at verse 11. Agabus came and made the prophecy about Paul, bound his own hands and feet with Paul's belt, saying, "The man who owns this belt is going to be delivered to the Gentiles by the Jews, and he'll be bound." That's what awaited Paul in Jerusalem. The brethren urged him not to go, but Paul said, "I've got to go." And verse 14, the brethren there said, "Well, the will of the Lord be done." That's where we got to on Wednesday night. Now, let's start in verse 15, about question 8, or verse 17. Now Paul gets to Jerusalem. He finally gets to Jerusalem, and the text says that the brethren received him gladly. And after the initial, we'll call them pleasantries, when they started to converse with one another, what was it that Paul did? He's been doing this after every preaching trip that he took. All right, he told them what all had happened to him. Now, of course, this is different than Antioch, because the Antioch church had sent him out on the previous journeys. This church did not send him out, and thus, if I can use the word, they weren't entitled to a report in that they had supported Paul, but he told them nonetheless, here's what all God has done through our efforts, all of our preaching. We established these churches, met these brethren, went through these sorts of things. It just says that he related one by one, verse 19, the things which God had done among the Gentiles through his ministry. How did they receive this news? Oh, they were happy to hear it. Absolutely. We're glad to hear it. Now, these were Jews who were happy to hear this. And we're going to contrast them with Jews who have not been as happy or who will not be as happy just in a few moments. So after Paul gives them this report, they say, "Well, Paul, we're really glad to hear that, and that really causes us great joy, but there's a problem." This takes us through verse 21. What was the problem that they told Paul about? Not that Paul would be surprised by this news. He knew what was going on, but they told him nonetheless. "Paul, there's a situation developing." Well, what did these Jews tell Paul? Yes, there are other Jews who aren't as happy to hear what you've just told us. They have heard that you're in town now. They've heard that you've made it. And they're going to come looking for you. And it's not going to be pleasant. So they're trying to protect Paul. They're trying to help Paul out as they see something develop on the horizon here. So they had a plan. What was their plan? Paul leave town. No, I'm not going to tell Paul to leave town. He's not going to leave town even if they told him that. He wasn't going to leave town. But what were they going to suggest to try to help Paul? Okay. They said, "Now, Paul, we've got these four Jews, and they've already, either they've just begun the vow or they're preparing to take this vow." It was some kind of a vow of purification, of ceremonial purification. We suggest that you join them. In fact, they even tell Paul in verse Let me find it right quick here. Verse 24. Not just join them, but do what else? You pay their expenses. You foot the bill in this. Whatever it was going to cost to engage in this vow, Paul, we suggest that you do that. What was their obvious motive behind suggesting to Paul that he do this? Yeah, this would be a show of good faith. Now, obviously, they're not telling Paul to do this for what reason? Yeah, this is not for salvation purposes. This is not to make you right with God. This is not saying that the law is now going to trump or supersede the gospel. That's not it at all. That had been their suggestion. What do you think Paul would have said? Well, I'm not going to do that. He's been invested too much already in the work of the gospel. But this was a show that nationalistically, is it okay to be a Jew? Yeah. That's just an acknowledgement of one's heritage. Nothing wrong with doing these things as long as it didn't contradict the gospel. And it would show these Jews that the things that are being slandered about Paul, let's find their words again. Verse 21. They have been told about you, this is them speaking to Paul, that you are teaching all the Jews who are among the Gentiles to forsake Moses, telling them not to circumcise their children, nor to walk according to the customs. Well, you know, that statement is open to interpretation. Could that be true in one sense? It could be true in one sense if someone would teach to do these things to be right with God. Then that would be a different matter. But would it have been wrong for any Jew who was a Christian, not just Paul, but anybody who had obeyed the gospel, but who was a Jew, to teach his children, well, we're not going to circumcise you, and we're not going to have to walk according to the customs. Would it be okay for Jews to still circumcise their sons? Yes. And would it be okay to walk according to the customs of the law? Well, it would, as long as it's not being done for the purposes of having fellowship with God, because that covenant, of course, is over. And so it depends on how one understands that question, whether or not it would be right or wrong. And obviously, is Paul going to take the vow? He's going to do it. So that tells us, for what reason did he do it? Well, it wasn't for the purposes of having fellowship with God. It was just for ceremonial, nationalistic purposes, to kind of honor his heritage, honor his ancestry, things like that. No problem with that at all. And so that's what they suggest Paul do. So Paul, we say that you should join these four men to sort of pacify or appease the Jews. Maybe they won't come looking for you now if they hear that you're taking this vow. Maybe they'll leave you alone. Really, I think is really what the motive was behind that. And this these instructions, in fact, look at verse 25. But what about these Gentiles? Now, this is about the Jews who are hunting you, who are looking for you. What about the Gentiles? What did these Jewish Christians say? Yeah, what does verse 25 remind you of? Yeah, that letter. Remember, they wrote that letter from the conference. How they would have instructed those Gentiles to abstain from things strangled, from blood, to avoid fornication, to avoid idolatry. Now, we've already wrote them about that. Okay, but this situation we're suggesting to you, this has to do with the Jews who are looking for you and going to cause a lot of trouble for you, Paul. So maybe this will kind of give you an out, if you will, and you won't have to contend with these Jews in a manner of speaking. So verse 26, the text just says, Luke writes that Paul took them in the next day, purified himself along with them, went to the temple, gave notice of the completion of the days of purification until the sacrifice was offered for each one of them. So Paul's going to do this. He saw merit in this suggestion. And that's what he's going to do. Yes, Norm. I think that's a good question. Norm asked him the question, if this concern hadn't have been in front of Paul from these Jews, if there were no such worry, do you think Paul would have done this? Could it have given the wrong impression to other Jews. Maybe it could have. Kind of like, maybe we can liken this to this. Did Paul have Timothy circumcised? Did Paul have Titus circumcised? What was the difference? The circumstances dictated to do it in this situation, but not do it in this situation. Maybe that's kind of a parallel to what Norm is asking. Given this situation, Paul saw that it was wise to do this. I'm quite sure in Paul's mind, he knew the reason why he was doing it. And he was not doing it for the reasons that Norm is suggesting that he would have done it had it been the reverse. This was not to be right with God. This was just to satisfy or to appease the Jews. I'm sorry, then I misunderstood your question. Okay. Well, maybe so. Maybe if this gave him a platform upon which to teach the Jews later, I think he would have done that also. Again, I think the circumcision of Titus and Timothy relates to that. Given whatever is available to him, what might happen in the coming days, Paul would have been able to seize any opportunity to make himself available to teach those who would listen to him, be they Jew or Gentile. Yes, Jerry? Right. Yes, that's a good commentary. Galatians 2. They sought to bring us into bondage, and we did not yield to them even for an hour and not having Titus circumcised. But this is I think, akin to that situation. Okay, so as we get now to the latter part of chapter 21, verses 27 through 40 really kind of all go together. Paul is in the process of this vow. So as it's now ongoing, the Jews are going to respond to it. And what is their response? And I don't mean these Jerusalem Jews. What Jews am I talking about? Verse 27. It identifies them. These are Jews from Asia. All right. And what do? They seize Paul. The vow isn't even allowed to run its course. It says, Luke writes that the days when the 7 days were almost over, didn't even get to finish the week out, Jews from Asia, that is, Jews from that southwestern tip of Asia Minor, where Paul had just spent a long time on the journey, they see him in the temple, and what do? They begin to work the crowd up. They begin to stir up the multitude, and they lay hands on him. They grab him. They apprehend him. And what is their statement? What is their stated reason for doing this? Yeah, was that true? They suppose. They assume. Have you ever made assumptions before in your life? We don't need to assume things. And they assume that this... what's the Gentile's name that's mentioned? They saw Trophimus, and they just assumed, well, Paul brought him from Asia. He's a Gentile. He took him into the temple. He's defiled this whole place now. And that's what they use to work the crowd up into a great big frenzy. My words on the chart there, they accused Paul of trying to ruin or end Judaism. You don't see those words in the text, but I think that's the gist of the message there in verse 28. They cry out, "Men of Israel, come to our aid. This is the man who preaches to all men everywhere against our people and the law and this place. And besides, he has even brought Greeks into the temple, has defiled this holy place." Then Luke records for us in verse 29 who it is that they're referring to. They had previously seen Trophimus the Ephesian in the city with him, and they supposed that Paul had brought him into the temple. So this statement in verse 28, they accusing Paul of being against the law and this place, that is the temple. Now, is Paul against the law? Well, again, that depends on what you mean by that. Would Paul be against the law in terms of what needs to be taught for man to be saved? Will he be against the law that way? Yes. He's teaching the gospel now. But he's not against the law in terms of his ancestry. In fact, jumping ahead just for a brief moment, look at chapter 22. And when Paul begins to speak to these people, verse 3, what is the first sort of thing that Paul talks about? Yeah, he talks about his pedigree. He talks about his ancestry. So it's not that Paul never talks about this again. Now, it's not that he's not proud of who he is. I mean, he is. He's got Israelite roots. He's got ancestry, heritage. That's in his family. You can't undo your family. But they're trying to put the spin on this that's going to put Paul in the worst possible light. If they can get the crowd going in a certain way, that's what they're wanting to do, then, in fact, they're succeeding. After they make their little speech, look at verse 30. What does it say? Did they succeed in this? Well, the crowd is aroused now, worked them to a fever pitch. They rush together. They take hold of Paul, drag him out of the temple. The doors are immediately shut. And verse 31, what are they trying to do? They're going to kill him. This is the end of it right here. So we have no problem seeing what their motive is. That's now going to force the Romans to respond. So here's what Paul has done and said and taken this vow. Now the Jews have responded with force, and that necessitates the Romans getting involved because, of course, we know the Jews were under Roman rule. So what do the Romans have to do? This is verses 31 through 40. So when news of all this commotion reaches the authorities, what has to happen? We have to stop this right now. We can't have this going on. So there's a commander. I believe the word is kiliarch in the old King James, and that's the word of the Greek. How many men did he command, these commanders? Be 1,000. We know centurions commanded 100 men, so this commander would have 10 centurions answer to him. So we're going up through the ranks of the Roman army. So this commander who has charge of Jerusalem's peace, and he's kind of like the police, if you will, in charge of keeping the peace in the city. He hears about this. They're out there just beating Paul unmercifully. What does he do? He gets and goes out and gets Paul. He has to sort of rescue Paul. Verses 32 through 33. And he attempts to find out, just like any law enforcement person would do, let's first stop the beating. Okay, now we got Paul out of their hands. Everybody be quiet. I want to know what's going on here. So he tries to find out why things are happening the way that they did. That's the end of verse 33. In fact, he not only does he take Paul from their hands, but then he binds him. So it appears now that Paul is under arrest to the Romans, and the commander asking what happened. Verse 34, what's the response that he gets? Everybody just starts yelling and shouting, one thing or another. He can't get the answer. Mass confusion. He could not find out the facts on account of the uproar. So what did he say to do with Paul? Take him away. This is not working. Let's get him off to the side here, and maybe we can find out what's going to happen that way. Why things are going on the way that they are. So being taken aside, Paul asked the commander a question. They start to talk. And as Luke writes this, he says, this takes us to verse 37. May I say something to you? And he said, do you know Greek? This is the commander. Why would the commander have asked Paul, do you know Greek? Look at the next verse. Now see, the Jews made an assumption earlier. Now the commander makes an assumption. Who did he think Paul was? So aren't you that Egyptian, that assassin who was the leader of some big band of men? I thought that's who you were. No, that's not who I am. So everybody's making assumptions in this situation. Nobody's getting to the bottom of it. He thought Paul was some troublemaker. And Paul convinced him that's not who he is. And what's Paul's request? Now, he just was out there in all that mess. What would you be tempted to ask for? Get me out of here.
I need some 24-hour police protection.
What's Paul say? I want to go back out there, and I want to talk to these people. Again, what's that tell you about Paul's heart? He's concerned about his national brethren, right? Not, and by that I mean the Jews. He's concerned about their souls. He wants to talk to them. And as you've studied Acts 22 before, and we'll comment on this just in a moment, what we find absent in Paul's speech, really, he did go out there to defend himself personally. What do you want to talk about? The gospel. Yes. You want to talk about the gospel. And again, that shows us just how much Paul loved men. We'd be so tempted. I know I would. I have to fess up and admit it. I'd want to defend myself. I've been wrongfully accused. Now, what you all assumed about me is not true. Paul didn't cover any of that. He simply talked about the most important need of the moment, and that is to talk to these people. So, Paul says, verse 39, I beg you to allow me to speak to this people. And so the commander gave him permission. That's verse 40. Paul stood on the stairs. He's being led away from this scene. So Paul now sort of has a podium or a platform, if you will. As he begins to speak, what language does he use? He speaks in the Hebrew dialect. What did the crowd do? They got quiet immediately. They hushed. And ignoring the chapter division, look at verse 1 and 2 of chapter 22. He says, brethren and fathers, hear my defense, which I now offer to you. When they heard that he was addressing them in the Hebrew dialect, they became even more quiet. So describe the scene back in verse 30 of 21, chapter 21, verse 30, as well as verse 34. What was the city like? Using those two verses. Chaos. Chapter 21, verse 40, and 22, verse 2. Describe the city now. You can hear a pin drop, probably. Paul's got their attention. This is exactly what Paul was wanting. A chance to address them and to talk to them. So, look at his address now, the first 21 verses of Acts 22. Paul reminds them of some things. What's the first thing he mentions? We made a comment on this a few moments ago. First thing he mentions is his Jewish pedigree. What's he say about himself in verse 3? Okay, I am a Jew born in Tarsus of Cilicia. That's where I was born, but I was raised and educated right here in Jerusalem. And whose name does he drop? What kind of man was Gamaliel? It's been several chapters ago, but how was he described? Do you remember? And what about respect to the people? Highly respected. Acts chapter 5. Highly respected. So Paul's not being political here and just dropping a name for the purpose of, you know, looking big and important. He actually was taught at the feet of Gamaliel. That's a true statement. And so he's talking about, here's the kind of person I am. He reminds them of that. And one other thing that he reminds them, that I'm thinking Paul's doing this to kind of establish some sort of a connection with those he's talking to. What else does he remind them of? Yeah, his former conduct. You know, I used to be like you. I used to be where you are now. I opposed this. I dragged men off to prison. Go back to chapter 9, of course. That's where we first read of Paul's actions, following, of course, the death of Stephen and the persecution that arose and the scattering that resulted because of all that. We've been through all this already, chapters 7 and 8 and into chapter 9. And Paul says, that's how I used to behave. And then specifically, here in 22, starting in verse 6, what does Paul discuss? All right. He talks about what led to his eventual conversion. Again, this takes us back to Acts chapter 9. So again, I think this is Paul just trying to establish a connection. He's not agreeing with them. He's not giving any endorsement to their behavior. That's not what Paul's doing. But he's just saying, you know, I can sort of relate to you people because I used to do the very same thing you're doing now. And he relates the events that led to his conversion. We've studied Acts 9 previously. We won't go through this verse by verse because it's familiar to us already. But I do want to draw out a couple of items from this. We're on page 127 now, by the way. And we'll answer a couple of questions here about question 3. He goes into the events on the road to Damascus. Excuse me. Talks about the light that he saw, the voice that he heard. Of course, this was the Lord's voice, obviously. The instructions that he was given, going to Damascus, inquire at the house of Ananias. Then he starts talking about Ananias in verse 12. So he describes his involvement, the role that Ananias played. As you recall from Acts chapter 9, Ananias came in and laid his hands upon Saul. Was it to give Saul the measure of the Holy Spirit? Is that why he did that? No. To receive his sight. Remember back in Acts chapter 9, then something like scales fell from his eyes, and Paul could see again. He had been blinded by this light. How long did he sit there in Damascus blinded? 3 days, remember that? There he is, and he's praying. Paul clearly was affected and moved by what happened on the road to Damascus. So Paul discusses the role that Ananias played in all this. Now, look in verse 14. This is the thought question of number 3. Based on what he says, he's referring to Ananias' words to Paul, or Saul as it was then. The God of our fathers has appointed you to know His will and to see the righteous one and to hear an utterance from His mouth. The question is, what did Paul become based upon the way verse 14 is worded? He became a witness, didn't he? Just like the original 12. Now, when the Lord was on the earth in His ministry, okay, before and after His crucifixion and resurrection, did Paul see the Lord? Then. He didn't see Him then. No indication that Paul saw Christ during that time period. When did Paul see Jesus? Saul. When did Saul see Jesus? On the road to Damascus. He saw the resurrected Christ. And he heard an utterance from His mouth. That made Paul a witness. That makes one a witness. And so the way Ananias phrases this, and Paul is relating all this, that accounts for his acceptance as one who can give eyewitness testimony. Verse 15, for you will be a witness for Him. This is again Ananias speaking to Saul. You'll be a witness for Him to all men of what you have seen and heard. Now, Paul, that's why, Saul rather, I keep getting it mixed up here. When it happened, it was Saul. Saul, that's why you've been selected. That's why you've seen what you've seen today. That's why the Lord has appeared to you this. He's got work for you to do. So he's talking about his role as a witness. But look also then, verse 16. What does Ananias say directly to Saul? He's chosen to be a witness, but Saul still has a problem. He's not been baptized yet. He's not obeyed the gospel. Even apostles had to obey the gospel. And so what was it that Ananias said to Saul? Off-quoted verse, Acts 22, verse 16. Why tarriest thou? What are you waiting for? Arise and be baptized. And the question in, this is question 3 again, what important use is to be made of verse 16? What do we learn? He's still in sin. What do we learn about baptism? All right, baptism washes away sins. Can you come to the conclusion of Acts 22:16 that baptism is necessary? Yes. How can sins get washed away without baptism? It's not going to happen. So baptism washes away sins. Saul had seen the Lord. He had talked to Him. I think we made comment of this when we were in Acts 9 a few months ago. Some would say, oh yes, Paul was saved on the road to Damascus. Anybody who's had that kind of an episode or an experience, Saul could have marched himself in almost any church in this land, if he were allowed to do so today, among men, and say, "Let me tell you what happened to me on the road to Damascus." Men would say, "Oh, Saul, that was your experience of grace. That was your experience of salvation. You've seen the Lord. You're saved." And that wouldn't make it so. Saul still had to do some things. In fact, the Lord said, "When you go to Damascus, look up Ananias. He will tell you what you must do. You have to do something." And one of which was, the main of which was, to be baptized. So important use can be made of verse 16. When we teach the gospel to others, or maybe need to look at it ourselves if we've not yet obeyed the Lord. Baptism washes away sins. And that's its purpose. And that's run true throughout the teaching of Acts. I've cited on the chart the 1 Peter 3:21. Peter writes later that baptism now saves us. Not the removal of the filth of the flesh, but the answer of a good conscience toward God. And that would certainly harmonize with that. Okay, so Paul is going through this recitation, if you will, of the events of how they played out. And the next thing he talks about in verse 17, what does he discuss? Following these events, he says. What does he mention next? Well, he mentions his return to Jerusalem, which we refer back from Acts chapter 9. "It came about when I returned to Jerusalem, and I was praying in the temple. I was in a trance." It's all vision, if you will. What did the instructions he get from the Lord say as he relates them here? "Paul, you're going to have to leave. You've got to get out of town." Why? They're not going to listen to you. They're not going to listen to you. Now, is this recorded anywhere else in the Acts record? This isn't recorded anywhere else. So see, if we didn't have Acts 22, we wouldn't have known this took place. Paul gives us, the Holy Spirit gives us some new information that's not recorded back in when it happened in Acts chapter 9. So make haste, get out of Jerusalem quickly, because they will not accept your testimony about me. What did Paul try to do when the Lord said this? Do you think he's trying to say, I think I can talk to them. I think they will listen to me because, as Norm says, I can relate to these people. I can get through to them. I can make their arguments. Verse 21, what's the Lord's first word? Go. I said to go. Now you need to do what I'm saying here. So again, Paul says, they themselves understand, verse 19, that at one synagogue after another, I used to imprison them. Verse 20, he mentions what else? I had a part in this episode with Stephen. I gave endorsement. I watched the cloaks of those who were stoning Stephen. So, I get from here that Paul is saying, I'd like to stay. I'd like to talk to these people. The Lord says, no, Paul, you need to go. I will send you far away to what? To the Gentiles. So I think Paul thought he could convince them. But the Lord's instructions are, no, Paul, you need to go. And so when Paul says this, the Lord ordered Paul to go. I will send you far away to the Gentiles. Verse 22. What's it say? How's your version read? They listened to him up till that word. What word is that? Gentiles. When they heard that word, they've given Paul a fair hearing up to this point. But he has the audacity to mention the word Gentiles to this audience. And then what about the quietness in the city? Well, there it goes again. It's gone. Mass confusion once again. Paul shouldn't have, well, some of them say, Paul, you shouldn't have said that. Well, Paul is—he's saying what needs to be said, but that just pushed their hot button, if you will. Well, Freddie's question is: since they didn't believe Paul anyway, why would they be so upset with what he's doing? Well, I think you're right, Freddie. I don't think they cared about the Gentiles anyway, but just the very mention of that word just incensed the Jews. They just had no concern at all for Gentiles or what happened to them or anything of the kind. That's just the way that it was. And so this now being the case again, who's been standing right beside Paul this whole time? The captain, the commander, he's been hearing Paul's speech. Now he sees the powder keg starting to go off again. So that the city becomes mob-like again. What's the commander have to do now? Well, we can't. We're going to have to end this. We're going to have to fix this again. So the scene just disintegrates right in front of the commander. It had been like a mob. It's been nice and calm now for the duration of Paul's speech. And just with the lighting of that match, it just blows up. And mass confusion again. So the verse 23, the men there in the city, they're crying out, throwing off their cloaks and tossing dust into the air. Can you picture that in your mind? They just can't stand what Paul has done. In fact, what is their cry? What do they cry out? Away with him. What's that mean? Put him to death. The man is not fit to live. Execute him. Who else did they say that about?
Jesus.
Yeah. Same sentiment. Exact same sentiment. Well, so the commander says, well, I've got to rescue Paul again. I wonder what the commander's thinking about Paul. Every time he's here in the city, something like this happens. I've got to pull him out of the fire, so to speak. And that won't be the last time either. We'll see it yet once again. So, what is the order about Paul now? What's the decision about Paul? All right, maybe we got to get to the truth about this. There's something that's making this situation the way that it is. I'm going to order Paul to be scourged. Okay, maybe we can extract the truth out of him that way. So that's the order that he gives. He still doesn't know why the Jews are acting the way they are. So let's take Paul aside and beat him, have him scourged. Well, so they get Paul stretched out, getting ready for the whipping. And how do you see Paul's demeanor? Is he all worked up and worried? I don't see that. Do you, Albert? In fact, what's the next thing Paul says? What was that? Yeah. Is it lawful for you to scourge a man who is a Roman and uncondemned? And I would picture in my mind that Paul said that rather calmly. He didn't scream and rant and rave, try to fight the being tied down. Is it right for you to do this? And when he said that, what was the soldier's reaction? Whoops. we better not do this. Obviously, what was the law? What was the Roman law? You could not do this. In fact, one of them said, be careful what we're about to do. This man is a Roman citizen. And if we do this, we're going to get in a lot of hot water with the higher-ups back in Rome. And we don't want to get in that situation. So, upon learning this, in fact, the statement that sticks out to me is verse 29. Therefore, those who were about to examine him immediately let go of him. They just get away from Paul. Like, we have nothing to do with this. Dropped it like a hot rock, if you will. And the commander also was afraid when he found out that he was a Roman and because he had put him in chains. So again, the commander does not get to the bottom of the situation. He can't find out in the city because it's too much of a chaotic moment. He gave Paul the chance to speak. That didn't result in anything. He says, let's take him away quietly, privately. Let's scourge him. Maybe through some pain he'll fess up and tell us what's really going on. But they can't do that because Paul's a Roman. He's uncondemned. The commander still doesn't know what to do. So what's the last decision he makes? Last verse of the chapter. All right, let's take Paul before the council. Let's call together the Sanhedrin. Maybe we can find the truth that way. Maybe that's where we'll learn why this is working out the way that it is. So, verse 30. The next day, wishing to know for certain why he had been accused by the Jews, he released him and ordered the chief priest and all the council, the Sanhedrin, to assemble and brought Paul down and set him before them. Perhaps that assembly would reveal to the commander why the Jews were so opposed to Paul. And that takes us to the end of class. And so chapter 23, Paul will speak again, not to the public at large, but to the council. And hopefully, as the commander was no doubt hoping, that maybe we'll finally learn why things are the way that they are. Okay, we'll pick up there, Lord willing, on Wednesday night, Acts chapter 23. If you do not get the new material, lessons 54 through 56, you need them. I have copies up here. Charles, did you get the new lessons?